You're listening to Studies in the Book of James. If you'd like more resources like this, or you're in the Kansas City area and would like to connect, you can find us at thebridgekc.church.
Most preaching is not new information. I'm actually a little suspicious of preaching that is mostly new information. Most preaching is reminding people what they actually know and giving them the courage to walk it out. And this is kind of one of those services. If you've come this morning saying, I hope I hear something I've never heard before, probably not going to happen. But you will probably hear some things you're struggling with, you're not actually doing. So let me encourage you to lean into what I remind you of this morning, because it's important stuff. We're in week 9 of our series on James, heading into the third chapter where James talks about two different things. He talks about things that are kind of at war with one another. He talks about our propensity to do damage with our speech, to say harsh things, to say the wrong things, to hurt people with our speech. And then towards the end of the chapter, he talks about the wisdom of God. And those two things relate in the idea that it is impossible to be undisciplined with your speech and really tap into the wisdom of God. You can't be loose with your words, be hurtful with your words, and in turn receive wisdom from God and walk it out. Because wisdom from God would have told you to watch your speech to begin with. And when we are loose with our words, God actually can't trust us with his own wisdom, because we're firing things off machine gun style. And so while James doesn't actually make that connection, I believe he puts these two passages together because he saw them a little bit as a unit. When we learn to guard our speech, the wisdom of God is revealed in our lives in a way that it is not revealed when we're loose with our words. So looking at James chapter 3, first we're going to talk a little bit about the high cost of leadership in regarding your speech. Now, before you think I'm letting you off the hook, be warned, this is about you, okay? Some of you go, well, I'm not a leader. Well, we'll talk about that in a minute. But this is about you as well. James chapter 3, 1 and 2. Not many of you should become teachers, my brothers, for you know that we who teach will be judged with greater strictness. For we all stumble in many ways. If anyone does not stumble in what he says, he's a perfect man, able also to bridle his whole body. One of the things you learn really quickly when you're in the public eye, when you pastor, when you're in front of people, is that there is a bit of a double standard for almost everything you do, just because you're in front of people. As a leader, you realize that people watch the most mundane things that you do. And this example is just some of your, this is going to be quizzical to you. But about 30 days ago, somebody came up with the idea. They found a picture of a pastor, a famous pastor on the internet, wearing a really expensive pair of tennis shoes. And so they posted a picture of him in the tennis shoes, and next to it is a picture of an advertisement for the tennis shoes and what they cost. And it was a little weird. And then they started looking around the internet, and they found a lot of pastors wearing really expensive tennis shoes. Like, I didn't know shoes cost this much, tennis shoes. And it's this internet account called Preachers and Sneakers. 30 days later, the guy has 150,000 followers on Instagram of people that are fascinated with the price of the shoes that their pastors are wearing. Now, why are people that interested in the shoes that a pastor wears and what they paid for them? Well, some people are just inherently critical. But for the most part, I think it's because we all know that as an authority figure, particularly one who presumes to speak for the Lord on some level, there is a measurement or a standard that is different than it is for other people. Now, is that fair? It just is. There is no account called movie stars and sneakers. Nobody cares. There's no account called rappers and sneakers. Nobody cares. But there's preachers and sneakers. And you can say, well, is that fair? Well, it's like saying there's gravity. Gravity just is. Whether it's fair or not, it just exists, and you got to deal with it. The heavy part of the weight on a leader, though, is not the price of their sneakers. That's easy. I mean, you can deal with that. Just don't wear expensive shoes. By the way, any pair of shoes I wear on a Sunday morning are available at $50. Anybody wants them, you can have them. Okay. That you can get away from the criticism of preachers and sneakers by just wearing ugly shoes. It's just easy. The greater difficulty or more intense leadership standard is not the shoes that a leader wears. It is what comes out of their mouth. Teachers and leaders have caused much more damage by improper speech than they ever have by spending more on their shoes than they should have. And in doing that, We don't just cause damage in the moment. We cause it retroactively, because when we say things that are hurtful, everything that we've said up until that point goes into question. And everything we say, it's also proactive, because everything we say after that goes into question. Now, I don't spend my whole day thinking about this, but I'll be honest, I think about this every day, that as a teacher, my careless speech in a benign area could cripple my influence in important areas. And that's just what it means to be a leader. In reference to speech, James goes on and he says that we all stumble. He's talking about all of us here now. He doesn't refer to a fatal fall when he's talking about stumbling, but something that impedes our progress and our effectiveness. And the most common way that we impede our progress and our effectiveness is through our speech. If I want to be effective as a teacher and as a leader, I need to be restrained in my speech. My leadership skills or my teaching ability cannot withstand me sharing my opinion on everything on the earth. It would completely undo my own spiritual progress and likely many of your spiritual progress as you listen and you learn and you discount what I might say because I may have been loose with my speech. Now, James announces this and we all go, yeah, that makes some element of sense. Here's the kicker, though. We all teach somebody. We all lead somebody. You may never stand on a stage, you may never get a microphone, but you stand in a position of leading somebody, and your careless speech negates your leadership in their life. Moms and dads, like it or not, we all homeschool at some level. The important things. I mean, they go to school, they learn things, but that's, you know, you can Google that stuff. But things like faith, things like morality, things like ethics, like godliness, like wisdom, those are homeschool items. You teach those, and your loose speech discredits you as a teacher in those areas. Some of you are the only Christian in your office. Guess what? You're the teacher in that office. When people have a question about the Bible and they all look at you, and the loose speech of the crazy thing that you said about the person in the other office 3 days before negates what you say in the moment there when God raises you up to teach. So this isn't just about preachers and sneakers. This is about people in the seats who God uses in their own realm to teach. And if you're not careful, the things you say off the fly negate any opportunity you get to share the word of the Lord with people when the door opens. At your big dysfunctional family reunion, you're the teacher. You're the one who God has shown things, and you get an open door. And if you are not able to control your speech about crazy cousin Eddie, then the things that you have to share about the Lord are suddenly discredited. Now, you might not feel qualified to teach, but to the guy who knows nothing, the person who knows just a little bit is a genius. And you actually are qualified to share what God has shown you. I read somewhere this week that there are three kinds of people. There are people who are scared. There are people who don't know enough to be scared. And there are people who know their Bible. And those are the three categories. And if you know a little bit of Scripture, you go into those situations and you can address those who are scared and those that don't even know enough to be scared, and you're the teacher. It is biblical that by nature of having been entrusted with a little bit, that you are responsible for more. Your role as a teacher or as an influencer is not to limit your ability by speaking poorly of others and in turn not have what you legitimately have to share be shared and received. No matter how clear we're communicating or how important the topic is, we can dismantle our effectiveness by careless speech. Loose speech will cause us to stumble, and then it will lead those that we have influence over to stumble. It's bad enough that we might lose our own influence. It's even worse that those that we influence would stumble because of our speech. Now, some people read this and they interpret this as a good reason to stay out of leadership. I have people, this is true, every week that tell me, I would not want your job. First of all, I didn't know my job was available. But thought it was going kind of well, but I understand what they're saying. I would not want your role, but you carry this role in somebody's life. You carry this influence in somebody's life. James goes on to talk then about speech in the general sense, not just as a leader, but as in the power of our words. And he talks about the fact that spoken words chart the course for our lives. We think the words that we share are primarily reactive to situations. Actually, the words that we speak are directive into situations. You ever look around and go, how did I get here? More than likely, something you said. You said, I love you. You ended up married. You said, I accept. You ended up in a job somewhere. I'm in an exercise program because of some words that I've said, like supersize. You know, I kind of prophesied my way into this. Because we say words, and then those words cause us to go places. James 1, 3 through 4. But if we put bits into the mouths of horses so that they obey us, we guide their whole bodies as well. Look at the ships also. Though they are so large and are driven by strong winds, they are guided by a very small rudder wherever the will of the pilot directs. Now, if you weren't raised around horses, you don't understand this, but there is a bit that goes in the horse's mouth that helps steer the horse. It's very small. Some of them are small enough you can put them in your pocket. The big ones are not that big. They're, you know, a couple of ounces at the most. But even that thing that's so small as it directs the tongue of the horse can move a 1,000-pound horse right, left, any direction you want to go. As the horse grows more and more aware of this thing that's on its tongue, it takes less and less pressure to turn the horse one way or the other. By applying pressure to the horse's tongue, you control where the horse goes. The whole horse goes in agreement with what rests on its tongue. And it's small. Likewise, the ship that might weigh many, many tons can be steered by a rudder that could probably be carried by one man. On the surface, you can't even see what's going on, but that ship turns on a dime because of that little rudder. There are people that say, I can't control my speech. I just get started, and I just have to speak my mind. If that is true, let's face the facts. You can't control much, not because your speech is easier to control than other things, but because your speech leads the way to your behavior. And when you don't control your speech, you end up not controlling anything else either. James is making a point here. It's hard to control our speech, but let's differentiate between what is hard and what is impossible. You guys do hard every day of the week. You raise your kids, you do your jobs, you stand up when you need to do things hard. And so we do hard things that we want to do. We do hard all day long. The question is, do we want to do the hard thing of controlling our speech? It is a hard thing to do. But the benefits of doing it are so incredibly high, and the pain points of not controlling our speech are so incredibly difficult that we can't afford not to. Because that bit in our mouth, if we can control it, we can go anywhere we want to go. If we can't control it, we end up going wherever the wind wants to take us. There's something I refer to periodically as asking the second question, meaning if you've got a little bit of information, what's the next logical question? When we used to run these big arena prayer events, I had a staff member who could never get through his head to ask the second question. Like, I'd send him to do an errand, and he'd come back with the basic facts, and I remember telling him one time, try and rent this arena for this event on this weekend, and he spends an hour trying to get the right person on the phone, gets the right person on the phone, and they're on the phone 10 seconds. He goes, okay, he comes back, he goes, it's not available that weekend. I said, what weekend is it available? I don't know, I'll have to get him back on the, you know, he couldn't get through his head to ask the next question. So we're going to ask the next question in light of how hard it is to speak and to control our speech. The writer of Proverbs asks the next question about what happens when we don't. We know that speech charts our course, but what happens when we're reckless with it? And he gives us three bits of information in just three verses, really quickly. See if you can see it. He talks about people who are argumentative, people who are deceptive, and people who gossip. Let's look at Proverbs 26, 17 and 19. Whoever meddles in a quarrel, not his own, is like one who takes a passing dog by the ears. That's a great picture, isn't it? This is amazing. Dog goes by, you don't know anything about. I'm going to grab this dog by the ears. What could happen? Like a madman who throws firebrands, arrows, and death is the man who deceives his neighbor and says, I'm only joking. For lack of wood, a fire goes out, and where there is no whispering, quarrel ceases. Now, what he talks about there are people who are argumentative and are deceptive, or people who are gossips. He doesn't use the word gossip there, but that's kind of what it's talking about. What makes people argumentative? I don't mean passionate. Passionate is allowed, but I mean quarrelsome. You know the kind of people I'm talking about? They will argue about anything. They just cannot bear the thought that somewhere someone is wrong, and they feel compelled to fix it. It's a complete waste of the gift of speech. In fact, it's actually dangerous. It's like grabbing a dog by the ears. You find yourself involved in a quarrel that isn't even yours. You can save yourself considerable pain by staying out of arguments that are not yours. Now, is there a time to stand up in the face of injustice? Absolutely. But there is also a time to stand down, because the person who stands up to every perceived wrong that does not involve them is almost invariably the person who just likes to fight anyway. Is that who we really want to be? The argumentative spirit is not a spiritual gift, okay? That is not a blessing the Lord has given you. That is something you need to get over. If you're one of these folks on Facebook that has to debate absolutely everything in the name of Jesus and as a favor to your family, stop. Okay? Just hit delete. Keep scrolling. Keep scrolling. You do not need to weigh in on that argument. How many of you run across an argument on Facebook? It's got 50 comments. You know all the characters. You know all their positions. Why? They had that argument 2 weeks ago. They're having it all over again. They're grabbing a dog by the ears. Let it go. There's nothing for you there. Other people are deceptive, this passage says, and they try and pass it off as joking, or it's just not that serious. They try and give themselves a little wiggle room for their lies because they've got a complicated relationship with the truth. The Bible says that people like that are like madmen, and they're firing flaming firebrands or arrows into people's lives. There is no small-scale deception, okay? There is no small-scale lie. And the closer you are with people, the more exaggerated this truth is. You can't exaggerate the truth. It is what it is, but the more important it is. Those of you who are married, who have little pockets of your life that your spouse does not know about, and you think it's because you just don't want to hurt them, you're hurting them. Okay? You're hurting them. It's deceptive. And the things that go on in those pockets of your life are things that you're not proud of. And there's a reason that you don't want the person who you are linked with forever to know about. Get clean, break down those barriers, and tell them what's going on. If the idea of your spouse picking up your phone and scrolling through the text messages makes you nervous, take the lock off your phone and hand it over. Because those little pockets of privacy is where deception starts, and it ends up firing blazing arrows into situations. Deception is not a joke. Lying is not a joke. In a relationship, you can't bear it. So Proverbs talks about people who step into arguments that are not theirs and who are deceptive. And finally, it talks about those that are gossipers. It uses the word whisperer. A person who can't help but pass on information and just add a little more fuel to the fire. They're the same person as the one who meddles in the quarrel that isn't theirs, but they do it in a little more subliminal way. They do it under the auspices of caring. Because we care, let me tell you about this. Also because I really want to tell you about this. And in a church setting where we care for one another, we don't get too much into backbiting, we don't get too much into lying, but there's a hair's breadth between a prayer request and a gossip. And we kind of flip back and forth sometimes. When you're relaying information, ask yourself, why am I telling them this? Why am I telling them all of this? Could they pray with less information effectively? And sometimes the information is very helpful. It really is. But why are we sharing it? Is it because we want people to pray? Or is it because we just really like that we have the information and you don't? Gossip and deception and argumentative spirit all goes down the same road, and like a bit in the mouth of a horse or a rudder on a ship, it steers where your life goes. Now again, we're not saying it's impossible to control our speech. It's hard, but do we give up on what is hard? No, we do what is hard. We don't leave the horse in the barn. We don't leave the ship tied to the dock. It is a tool that God has given us. And just as it can be used for evil, it can be used for good. The tongue is not used only to shipwreck our hearts. It can be used to prophesy. It can be used to speak truth. And James isn't just issuing a warning. He's describing the fact that you can control a large segment of your life and how you relate to people by how you speak to them. Proverbs 18:21 tells us death and life are in the power of the tongue. and those who love it will eat its fruits. If our words can bring pain and death in people's lives, they can bring life, and they can steer life in a positive way. I'm not talking about a weird positive confession, but when we speak about good opportunities, when we speak about the good in people, we usually see the best of opportunities and the best in people. He goes on to say, and those who love it will eat its fruit. Those who discipline themselves and discipline their speech to speak well of other people will live in a bounty and a blessing that others who don't do that will not have. Harsh words inflict serious damage in hearts and minds. Serious damage. Now, we flew this week, almost our entire family. 9 kids, Kelsey and I, a daughter-in-law, and a helper. 13 of us went through TSA. How was your week? Kelsey, my dear wife, is a saint. She's got TSA pre-check, which means you can get through a little quicker. And she would go, let me just take all the children myself. And she'd take all of them through TSA pre-check. And I'm like, never in a million years, honey. I don't know how she did it, but it was hard. Years ago, we were checking. We were just out. Our boys were really little, and our second son was probably 10. We got to TSA, and we're going through the check thing. And they say, is there anything in this backpack that's dangerous? No. Are you sure? You know, they're asking you, something tells me they know something I don't. I don't think there's anything in there. Well, will you reach in? I reach in. It's my son's backpack. I'll put a railroad spike. He's trying to take on the plane. They're afraid he's like build a railroad in the airplane or something. I don't know. But the TSA tries to dismantle anything that would cause damage. All right? And it makes sense. But in the run-of-the-mill life, nothing causes damage like words. On a plane, certain things need to be eliminated, but on the ground, in the workplace, in the family, you can't eliminate words. You've got to use them to communicate. In fact, with communication being what it is, words only increase in our lives. Most of you are encountering way more words than you did 20 years ago. They come on your phone, they come on your TV, they come through your headphone. Words, 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 words. I have 3 fourth grade girls. There are so many words. And when words go and they fly and they're easy, oftentimes the wrong ones come out. When they are controlled and measured and led by the Spirit of God rather than our own passions, then the words we say give incredible life. I've referred in the past to our friend Bob Sorge. I've quoted him 3 or 4 times. It was kind of funny. The first time I ever quoted him, I looked up and it's about the time I'm ready to quote him, I realize he's sitting there. Like he was there visiting. And I felt so weird saying, as Bob says, when Bob's right out there. But Bob, prior to being a writer and being a speaker, was a worship leader and had a surgery on his throat go poorly, and his voice is very, very weak. Bob speaks like this at all times. And he can only speak about 30 minutes a day, and then he completely loses his voice. Everywhere he goes, if you were to go to coffee with Bob, he would bring a little notepad, and he kind of writes things. And he laughs at people because he'll write a question and show them the notepad, and they'll take the pen and write the answer. And he's like, oh, you can talk. You can talk. But Bob still travels and speaks. It's one of the most selfless things I've ever seen anybody do because it causes him great pain. I've heard him countless times. But when he speaks, you find yourself leaning in because each word is a little faint. But then after you listen to him a little bit, you find yourself leaning in because every word is like gold. Like this guy is incredibly concise and crafted and wise. And I've thought about it over the years, and it's just struck me. When words are difficult, you choose them more carefully. When there's a little pain to it, you think about which words you're going to use. When words are easy, it just goes everywhere. And words are almost a little too easy for us, and we throw them every direction, and we hurt people. James 3, 5-8. So also, this tongue is a small member, yet it boasts of great things. How great a forest is set ablaze by a small fire. And the tongue is a fire, a world of unrighteousness. The tongue is set among our members, sustaining the whole body, setting on fire the entire course of life, and set on fire by hell. Boy, James, tell us how you feel. For every kind of beast and bird, of reptile and sea creature can be tamed and has been tamed by mankind, but no human being can tame the tongue. It is a restless evil full of deadly poison. We can all look back at our life at some place where we said something we wished we had not said, and we regretted it. And if you look at James' writing style, again, he's strong, okay? He's just like, there were times, like, if Peter could have written, he'd have been James. Because Peter would say things, but James just writes with a really strong. Remember also that James was a half-brother to Jesus. It was Jesus' brothers who mocked him in John 7, probably the earliest people, maybe the first people to ever mock him, when they told him, for no one works in secret if he seeks to be known openly. If you do these things, if you can do miracles, if you can raise the dead, if you can heal the sick, show yourself to the world. James was among the brothers who would have mocked Jesus. And you wonder, as James writes this, if he's thinking about words that he said. If he's thinking about things that he's like, oh, I know this very well. Did James think about that phrase, show yourself to the world, as Jesus hung on the cross? Show yourself to the world. Do you wonder if his voice echoed in Jesus' mind as Jesus hung on the cross? James' individual words or behavior didn't cause the crucifixion, but it's easy to imagine a scenario where he said those words 3 years earlier and started that event into process, and Jesus hung there thinking, no one here understands me. It was so painful that when Jesus looked around to ask who would take care of his mother as the oldest brother, he looked around and realized he had no brothers there. And he had to ask John if he would care for his mother. How might those words, if you do these things, show yourself to the world, have hurt all the more when he was showing himself to the world and the person who said those words wasn't even there to watch? Harsh words can cause exponential damage beyond what is intended. Did his brothers really understand how painful that was going to be? They might have chosen their words a little more carefully. Harsh words do worse things than make people feel bad. They actually attack something that's very near the heart of God. They attack his identity. James 3:9. We're going to wrap this up very quickly. With it we bless our Lord and Father, and with it we curse people who are made in the likeness of God. I want to ask if Daniel will come up. Every person that you're going to interact with today, every person, the person who takes your parking spot, the waitress who brings your dinner too late, the kid at the table who hollers, every one of those people is stamped with the likeness of God. Amen. And in speaking harshly and in responding too quickly, we think we're criticizing behavior, but we're actually speaking to God's image in them. Those realities, your harsh thinking towards them and the image of God on their life, those are incompatible. So guess which one of those two has to change? It's our speech. James 3:10-12, from the same mouth come blessing and cursing. My brothers, these things ought not to be. Does a spring pour forth from the same opening both fresh and salt water? Can a fig tree, my brothers, bear olives, or a grapevine produce figs? Neither can a salt pond yield fresh water. God knows our heart, but you know what? All the world sees is our actions and our words. And what comes out is in us. This week, I want to challenge us. Can we guard our speech? Can we carefully interact with people who have the image of God stamped on their lives? Can we treat them as dear as God would treat them? Because if we don't, we surrender every opportunity we have to speak the gospel into their lives.
Thanks for listening to this episode of our 14-part series on the book of James. If you're in the Kansas City area, we would love to meet you. Check us out at thebridgekc.church.